Hello and welcome to Differential Discussions. I'm Melissa.
And I'm Dave.
And today we're here with our guest series where we're going to have Vicky Cunningham join us to talk about how super techs, so the laboratorians working the bench, how they're amazing bench techs, bench laboratorians, they're not always super supervisors. So, Vicky, welcome.
Thank you very much for having me. The thing that I think about when it comes to communication is how different it is with different people. And I would encourage anyone who is thinking about wanting to be a supervisor to, again, you got to evaluate how am I communicating with other people? How about people that are above my pay grade, people at my pay grade, and people below my pay grade? And I think it's crazy that people don't, in my mind, don't automatically realize that it's different for you. It's different, but it still should be respectful across the board. So if you're with superiors, a lot of your communication really truly needs to be to the point. If you're with them, you want to make the best use of their time. You don't want to be that supervisor that goes in to talk to your VP and ends up talking about, yeah, well, we had a little bit overheating of an instrument, and but we got that fixed. You want to go in there with, I have specific things that I need to talk to this VP. Say the good stuff, make sure you look good, but also say, and I need help with this, that sort of thing. And often, the way you would communicate to them is you write. You want to write something down so that you can clarify it, make it be as precise as possible. So, communication then with colleagues, people that are at your pay grade. And if we're talking about supervisors, that would be like other supervisors or other technical directors, that sort of thing. And your communication with them can be broader. That is the group truly that you're going to get the most support from, as long as you have good colleagues. And you should be able to get encouragement from them as well. The you're not necessarily going to get encouragement by your supervisor yourself. I had three different vice presidents that I had to speak to, and of the three vice presidents, I only had one that ever gave positive feedback to me. It's not that I was doing anything different, it's that vice president knew how to give support and encouragement to me. So, another thing about your colleagues, and you guys know this already, your colleagues, the people at your pay grade, your level, they help to diffuse you. And there's two ways you need that diffusing. Number one is you need that diffusing so that if you're freaking frustrated by your VP, you don't blow up in the VP meeting. If you're struggling with staff people that need to be dealt with, you don't want to blow up at them either. That's counterproductive. Trust me. And so you want to be able to go to those other people that are your pay grade and get the help from them.
Well, I think what's important with that too is it's also important for you to know as a supervisor that if you're complaining, you shouldn't complain down either. So don't talk to your staff and complain about your colleagues or your supervisor. You want to complain, horizontal or up, depending on what the complaint is, if you can go up, but never down.
That's right. Absolutely. Absolutely. And that actually, as I wrote my notes about things I wanted to talk about, that's one of my points. It's so important. The other thing about using your colleagues to diffuse is And again, I needed to learn this, and I did finally learn it. But you need to not take your frustrations and struggles home. So find a colleague to get that diffusing going, get it done so that when you go home, you're still the person that you want to be around the people that you love, that you care for or care about. So I think that's important. Now, there's one other group before I talk about staff who would still be below your pay level, but there's a whole other group. It's the non-laboratory personnel. Now, there are a couple things that you need to do. And if you are in a supervisor position or a technical director position, you really should know the name of the people who replace the paper towels or clean your bathrooms or wash your floors or whatever else. But
shout out to Lucian, second shift, kept our place clean.
Honestly, that's
such a lovely man.
Wow, exactly. And maybe know a little bit, find a little bit about their family. Everybody who has a family, unless, you know, there are a few people that are outliers, but most of the time people want to talk about their family. They might be happy. They might complain a little bit, but they want to talk about their family or their dog or a cat, something like that. But whatever that those other people are that are in their life, find out their names and value the task that that person does. Now, so again, an experience that I had back when I was the technical director, I practiced this. I would always greet the maintenance people, the couriers, the people sweeping the floor, whatever. And there was this one guy who was, you know, he did plumbing. He did other stuff, but he did plumbing. And the hospital, several departments in the hospital, the institution, were having difficulties with plumbing. I can't remember what it was, but I mean, they were able to identify it in the end, but that's beside the point. But there were three different places. And this guy came and he took care of our bathrooms in the laboratory. And he said, well, I had to come here because my family would not be happy if I didn't keep you guys happy. I mean, all I did was know his name, appreciate what he did, and I would ask him about his family sometimes. Yeah, so it doesn't always benefit you, but it's nice when it does. And even if it doesn't benefit you, you need to be respectful. So our communication.
It's the organization, right? Like, the organization benefits from it. That gentleman probably enjoyed his job like a little bit more.
A little bit more. Yeah.
You know, so.
Yeah. So I agree. So our communications are different, but they should be equally respectful depending on who you're talking to. So how about staff? What do you think is important with communication with staff?
Frequent.
And this part of it. That I think this is the part that I needed most. So when I had someone above me that I could talk to, even if it's something that's out of their control, if I felt like they listened to me, they internalized what I was saying, and then maybe they go, you know what, that, you know, that's tough. You know, and then even, you know, it's totally outside their hands, but being heard was therapeutic and then built trust that then feeds back into the overall relationship. So for me, just being listened to is so important.
I always call that FaceTime. You know, you've got to be with them. You've got to have time with them. I remember when I did this talk before, I talked about there were three M's. And one was more is better. And that's what you said, Melissa, more is better. And you can have meetings. Now, I'll talk about meetings in just a sec. But there are also memos. Meetings are great. Memos do the filler in between. And but if you have a meeting, you're going to be around the staff. You want them to really hear what you're going to say. There's three T's. One is you tell them what you're going to tell them. The second T is you tell them. And you can probably figure out what the third T is. You tell them what you told them. And I mean, I learned that concept from preachers. A good preacher is going to do that. They're going to tell people what they're going to say, and they're going to say it, and then they're going to tell them what they said. So I feel like if you communicate with staff and you really want them to hear something, that's what you got to do. So if you're going to have a meeting, and maybe you have to let me know. Did your MBA program talk about how to run a meeting? And honest to goodness, don't we do bazillions of meetings? So how do we have a good meeting? Number one, have an agenda. I can't believe how many times I go to a meeting and it's like, well, what are we going to talk about? You know, and that might be a meeting I'm going to at church, or it might be a meeting about the volleyball organization. Yeah, give me an agenda. Then you can focus on what you're talking about. You don't have to think about what else is going to come up, that sort of thing. How about this? Have a start time and an end time. People's time is valuable. If you go into a meeting and you say, well, we're going to start at 8:30, and then you start at 8:45, what's going to happen? Do you have any idea?
Dave's frustrated already. So
okay. And you know why you're going to be frustrated? Because you're there at 8:30 and other people will come at 8:45.
Yep.
So you start at a start time, and don't, you know, there may be a few rare times when you need to go over. Most of the time, if you have a half hour meeting time, you get everything done in a half hour. If you have an hour, you get everything done in it. So in other words, have a start and an end time. And then there should also be expectations. You know, there should be expectations of how people act during the meeting, or the thing, but how people communicate to one another or talk to one another. And how about, who do you expect to be at that meeting? If one of the things that, again, if I go back again, my longest stint as a manager of multiple people was when I was the technical director. And I wanted to have a meeting with all the staff. I wanted every single person to be there. So we had to plan for my expectation. So we did three different meetings. And they were scheduled at times where we get the night shift in the morning and the day shift. And then we'd have one a little bit later, and that would get the rest of the day shift. And then we'd have one in the afternoon to get the end of the day shift and the people on evenings. So, you know, you have to plan for whatever the expectation is. And then the other thing is you got to control the people that are involved. All of us have been in a meeting where someone has monopolized the conversation. And that just doesn't go well. People get disengaged. And if somebody is coming in, and I'm trying to think of, let's say there's a technical rep that's coming in to talk to your staff about some new product that's available. Tell them, you've got 6 minutes, you know, and allow them to talk for 6 minutes, and then they're done. Yeah. So it's just that control is real important. So, So that's like communications and anything else that you can think of under communications?
Pretty well.
Okay. I do, if I, there was one thing that you said that I'd like to say it again, is that you have, maybe would have had an idea and you shared that with a supervisor and they really listened to it, considered it. That is, whether they can do it or not, or bring that about, that's really not the key in communications. The communications is hearing you. So whenever you can take people's ideas and get them involved, engaged, that's super. If you can't, you can reflect that to the person and thank them for their ideas. And let's keep looking back at this. You know, that sort of thing. So I think you should be a supervisor.
There's also this phenomenon too. Let me know what you think about this. Might be a bit of a tangent, but some of the people that should be leading, and I don't, I'm not saying this about myself, but just generally speaking, sometimes the people that should be leading just don't want to lead. Mm-hmm. You know, so like I was someone who never actually had any kind of a leadership role in the laboratory, even though I was very experienced. And I think in some ways, informally, I was a leader, right? But I never wanted it, in truth. I just don't, I don't know. I don't know your thoughts on that, but.
You didn't want to be in the leadership role?
Yeah. Okay. So I was fine with leading by, so I generally would be, I would say in the category of like leading by example, right? And so there might be people developing their skills new to the craft, and they might gravitate towards me for one reason or another. And I was happy with kind of like leading in that capacity, but like taking on a formal leadership role is something I'm incredibly averse to. I thought in some ways it actually would undermine my leadership, that being amongst the people is one of the characteristics that kind of made my leadership style kind of like shine. I don't, that could have been wrong intuition, but that's how I felt.
Well, you remember I was talking about the different kinds of leadership? So people lead in different ways. And, you know, some people love to be that I'm big, bad, and in charge kind of leadership, and I'm going to tell everybody what to do. That's not really truly the kind of person who people gravitate to for leadership. It's the people who, the people who lead well are the ones who share what they know. You know, who are those coaches? And let me tell you, any super supervisor is not going to do a great job, not going to look good, unless they have other leaders who are doing those kinds of leading. You know, the supportive leading, the coaching. And so it just, you know, perhaps, I don't want to put words in your mouth, but perhaps what you are meaning is that you didn't want the title of a supervisor. You know, I think of that might be a kind of position I could imagine you being in is like a senior tech. You know, because
I was the unanointed senior tech, I think you could say. Yeah.
And it's people like that if you identify them, I mean, it's the same thing I talked about before. You identify them, you nurture them a little bit, give them support, encouragement, and then let them do what they're already good at. So
that I felt better as a role player amongst them than I did perhaps, like, and maybe that was a maturity thing too, right? And maybe, well, I just wasn't ready. Yeah,
I would agree. Speaking of maturity, I shared that situation where I said an administrator. It was the president of the hospital came to me and asked me if I would be the supervisor, that they would make this woman step down from her supervisor job. And hey, you be supervisor. I don't know what allowed me to say, oh, no, I can't do that yet. But I'm sure glad that I did, because I at that point in my life, I wasn't ready for that. So I don't know. Maybe it was a God thing. I don't know. God kept me from screwing up too badly. But again, you know, we're at different points in our life. When I think of the two of you, you and Melissa, as educators, I mean, you didn't become the good educators that you are right out of school. You know, you learn from it. You get better at it. You get more education. You practice it. You get better at it. You know, I think that we need to see that that process, that whole process.
Excellence is a work in progress. It's like it's a constantly iterative process. Yeah.
There was something else that you mentioned earlier, is about correcting people and not really correcting people. Honestly, I think that now I put that kind of under the category of discipline.
Time for the stick. Tell us about the stick, Vicky.
I know. Melissa, you're okay with a stick. You talk a big talk like that, but you do a great job in helping people get better. and I would think that Dave probably does as well. But it's, I mean, with discipline as a supervisor, you know, it is like absolutely essential to figure out what sticks you can use. And I have a suggestion that the very first stick to use to keep yourself out of having discipline problems is learn how to interview people. What you want to do is you want to hire in the right people. And there's several things that you can do. Number one is, if somebody's going to be interviewing, you would have an application or their CV, you should study it. You don't just glance down through, oh, okay, well, they went to UVA, or they went to UMass, whatever. You study it, see what the education experience was. Where's the gaps in training? Where might be the gaps in in your work experience? Things like that. And then have a plan for the interview. You know, just show up, or somebody shows up and they come in, you just interview them. That we need truly to have a plan for the interview, especially if you're going to be interviewing multiple people. And so you should have specific questions that you want to ask. And if you're interviewing with other people, you can share the questions among each other. You know, you don't always have to ask the same question. Somebody needs to ask that question. Because then you get to compare, what are these people saying? And then really listen. Do they, you know, like, what are they saying about themselves? What might they be intimating about their work, their work ethic, or their values, things like that? And then this is another thing people forget to do, document. You know, it's like document, document, document. And I know I've said that to you, at least Melissa, is that documentation is absolutely essential, because you get to the next interview, you're kind of like, well, did that person say that or did this person say that? You know, if you have it written down, you've got that. And as far as discipline goes, you're going to need to know about that documentation in the future too. And then, you know, when it's all done, evaluate the interview. Don't just say, oh, okay, well, they seem like a nice person. You know, but you have to go through the steps of actually evaluating it again. And again, I had to learn that. I had really, when I first became that technical director, we had holes in our schedule and we had people that were really poor performers and it was a mess. So we started interviewing. It was like, oh, okay, let's get these people in here. And we actually hired a couple people that, yeah, okay, they had an education. They're willing to come to this place and we can train them. Sure, go. And it wasn't the right fit. It just wasn't the right fit. So, you know, good interviewing can really, it can make for not having to do as much discipline. So the interview, and then how about this? Both of you know this. The training.
Yeah.
Training is absolutely key. You get the best people and then you train them well. And that was a quote that I got out of one of the first management textbooks that I started studying. And so what are the keys to good training? You tell me. What's one of the keys?
Have a checklist.
Structured.
What's that? Yeah.
She said checklist, I said structured, which we're saying the same thing. Like,
that's good. Yep. Yeah, you want to have something. It's that your goal set, you know, that's you're setting a standard. You want to make sure you cover all these tasks and according to what level of success, you know, should it be? We always have to do it. Otherwise, you don't know truly if the person is getting better. And again, from my hematology background, if I was training someone to do differentials, I would want to know that if I gave them an unknown and they read that differential, if there's toxic granulation in that those neutrophils, I want to know that they saw it.
Yeah.
And if they didn't, then let's do some more training.
Yeah, the blind assessment, right? The
So it's like, you know, this should be, you said assessment. That's good.
You need a trainer. So,
anything else?
You need a trainer.
Yay! Honest to goodness, Melissa, that is like the most important thing. Get the right person for the job to do the training. You don't want somebody that doesn't give a hoot. You don't want somebody who is going to offend the newbie. You don't want somebody who is they're okay at the bench level. You want somebody that's really good, who also has the people skills for it, and who has good time management. So, yeah, find a good trainer. And then support them. You know, give them
one. That was a tough part about being perhaps like a good trainer in a lab too, right? Is when they're like, you're on this bench. Oh yeah. And can you cover this bench? Oh, and you're training. I mean, I'm sure people listening this will ring somewhat true to them.
Absolutely. You expect them to do a good job, but you don't give them the time or the ability to do a good job. And really, truly, I often talked about train for success. We want the person to be successful. Mm-hmm. And if that's the case, then you have to make the training be successful. And you can't do that if, say, you're training somebody on a body fluid bench and that trainer is having to actually do the body fluids that are coming in, keep up with that, and train the person. It just doesn't work. You got to do that. That's important.
Dave and I actually just did a podcast last month, I think, on train the trainer, how to make sure your trainers are properly trained.
Wow. That's perfect. That's perfect. I've listened to a lot of your podcasts. That is not one that I have listened to. If it was that long, I was in Portugal during that time then. So that was fun. That's an aside. But actually, I think travel is probably one of the best things about retirement. That's great. Back to the talk at hand. Another thing about training and getting the right trainer, training for success, making sure that you have ways to measure that. There's this intangible that has to happen, and it's everything else, you know? And honestly, Melissa, you were super at this. I admit, Dave, I didn't get to watch you be a trainer.
I was still a bit early in my career, yeah.
Yeah, I'm that much older than you. But it's like people need to know, where do they go to the bathroom? You know, when is an appropriate time to take a break? When I'm going to have to eat at some point, where can I eat? If I bring my lunch, is there a refrigerator I can put it in? You know, those are like things that should be covered. And as a part of somebody's training as well. And otherwise,
I feel like places give orientation, and they're orienting you to some aspects of the institution, but then just others, like you said, like where to go for lunch or like the silly things, but they add up, you know?
Yeah. I would not say they're silly, but they are minor. And because they're minor, they get forgotten. Well, everybody knows where the bathrooms are. You know, everybody knows where the cafeteria is. Everybody knows that you don't want to go to the cafeteria the day they have taco salad because everybody goes to the cafeteria that day. You know, it's just, I don't know. Those are the intangibles. If you have a trainer.
They're not important to the job, which is why people don't think about bringing them up, but they're important to the person's quality of time in the job.
Absolutely. I couldn't say it better myself. Another thing that I think is really key in the training process is daily contact. It's the daily contact. Certainly the trainer is going to have daily contact, but if the supervisor or a technical director takes time out of their day to just touch base, how's it going? You know, anything we can do to help? You have any questions? Okay, great. Have a good day. Nice job, Melissa. Keep your training going. You know, how much time does that take? Not much, but it's huge for the person. It really, truly is. So do you want to talk a little bit more about discipline? Because this is the heavy stuff people don't want to do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's important. I think the part I don't like about it is the idea of like, forgive the crudeness, but like punching down kind of felt bad. But like someone on my equal, I feel more free with my perhaps. But yeah, it always felt bad like coming down on people.
Okay. Well, there's several things that let me talk about one thing just to get it out of the way, because it's easy. It's pretty easy. In the discipline process, people really need to use evaluations as a part of the discipline process. And I say that because so often evaluations are done because people want to get more money in their hourly rate. And so the supervisor wants to say all the positive things about it, and so the person can get more money, because sometimes that's the only way you can give a person more money, where truly reality is key. You have to be realistic in an evaluation. Now, again, I learned from experience that reality is key. I knew that. the problem I had was that I forgot that there should be no surprises in an evaluation. So I had several of the supervisors I was working with, I provided evaluation for them that was really designed, and my heart was in it the right way, was designed to help them grow, to get better at their job, to look better to their staff. But some of the things that I included in the evaluation was a surprise to them. And if you want to be a good supervisor, you can't do that. You need to be able to do the one-on-ones, and I'll talk about how to do one-on-ones, but you have to be able to do the one-on-ones and make sure that you keep a record of that and you're communicating that with that person that you're supervising, so that when it comes back to evaluation time, if they didn't correct it, you can include it in the evaluation. If they corrected it, you can include it in the evaluation and say, this person got so much better. They're, you know, they really excelled at this point. So I learned a lot about how to use evaluations in a more effective way. So reality's key and no surprises. I'm trying to think what might be the next thing to talk about is, if you think of your correction, you're talking about the don't want to do the beat down kind of thing. Well, you might ask the question, so, okay, this isn't that bad. Why can't I let it slide? Or it's really not that bad. They'll learn, they'll get better, that kind of thing. But if you don't address the issues in a laboratory setting, you could actually hurt a patient. I can go back to the poor training that I observed in that one institution I was working in. And, could kill a patient. Physicians make decisions based on 100% trust in the results that we turn out. So we want to make sure that we do the discipline. Don't be afraid of it. Just learn how to do it better. And if you don't do that discipline, another thing that will happen is it's going to hurt other employees. They're going to see that. And it really is going to lower morale for the patients. And frankly, it makes you look bad as a supervisor if you don't take the bull by the horns, as they say in some circles. So what are some poor discipline situations you can think of?
I think the ones I think about, I think where I'm in, when I get into a position where I feel really uncomfortable is perhaps there's a work quality issue, a bit of a competency issue, right? You address it with the person and then the issue persists. This is where I really feel like super uncomfortable. And I think now with a little bit more maturity, well, I think the only real answer is like training, right? So whether you call it retraining or whatever the term is. I think it's the, we talked about this and it's still happening. Yeah. Now I feel very uncomfortable personally.
I got some tools for you to use. I totally agree. A great example of poor discipline or using discipline is, when you don't correct poor performance. How about absenteeism? How about that?
That's a huge
or
one.
Or tardiness.
Yeah.
If you don't address it, staff sees it, and it's just, it's never good. It's never good. And you mentioned the tardiness. If a person's tardy all the time, and you don't call them on it, you're basically rewarding their bad behavior, and it just doesn't cut it. How about the person that, you know, they're on a particular bench and they do the work, but they kind of get behind and they get behind and somebody else has to step in and help them get caught up. And then they get behind again and they get behind. So that uneven workload, or the person that takes 4 breaks during the day. Well, you know, I'm only gone for 10 minutes, but you know, those multiple break times, that causes an uneven workload. And honestly, you have got to address that. All those things. And so the...
My favorite is the person that leaves all the hard differentials for someone else to do, even though they're on the diff bench.
Real talk, yeah. Yeah. That's a real phenomenon.
It is. That sort through the stuff. And certainly when you have a system that is like a seismic system, where it's like electronic, yeah, they can skip over things and, you know, it's just not right. So what are you going to do? I would suggest you have to do a one-on-one. Now, Dave, yes, this is going to make you uncomfortable. I know that. But they should be uncomfortable too, because this person is driving you to do this. And having to do it is, you know, it's the right thing to do for the staff, for the patients, for the physicians, even for that employee doing this one-on-one. And what you want to do is you want to be able to talk to them about it and use reflective listening. You know, so I'm noticing, or we have noticed, that you'll have a tendency to skip John Brown's differential all the time. Well, John Brown has a myelomonocytic leukemia and their cells are all over the place. So, you know, you don't talk about that, but it's like, I'm noticing that you skip this differential all the time. And you have a tendency to skip these differentials as well. Can you tell me why? And then you listen. Hopefully they answer you. You might have to end up prompting them to talk, but you have to do that approach and then hopefully engage them in conversation about it. Now, after that happens, you try to come up with a plan. You know, maybe it's what Dave said, you're going to do retraining. Maybe you've done that already. And then maybe you say, okay, well, we've already done retraining. So what we're going to do is we're going to give you, I don't know, some kind of, you're going to get tested. You know, we're going to give you these differentials and you need to have a 80% success rate in completing these differentials. So it becomes like a kind of a test for them. Or, you know, you get to that point where maybe it's just really tough and you have to get a plan for correction in place. Like, you know, we're going to be looking at this. If you skip this again, then this is like your, basically your first warning, you know. And honestly, you don't often have to go through all those steps. Usually the people want to do a good job. I think Dave's view of human nature would shine in that situation. People usually want to do a good job. They don't want to be looked down at by their staff or their colleagues. So you're playing at their better nature. So they want to do better, but you may get to that point where you are going to have to do something else. No,
and that's the part of the job that I just can't, like, it's just so hard. There could be a situation where someone's skills, their aptitudes, their constitution, they are not suited for the job and they need to be dismissed. And that part to me is heartbreaking, to deprive someone of, not deprive someone, that's not the right way to look at it, but
remove their life.
And so that part of it would be very that would be one of the hardest things for me to have to deal with as a supervisor.
Yeah, I understand. I totally understand. If you're in a supervisor role, one of the things that you learn is, or if you're going to be really successful, you would need to learn that it's, at that point, it's not personal, it's more business. Not an easy thing to do. The thing that you would be wanting to do in this whole process, I've mentioned this before, is document. You would document that, okay, there was this issue, I talked to this person, date and time. The next thing, maybe, okay, well, you know, we're going to sit down and we talk this through. We decided we need to do more training. You document that. The person realizes they're being retrained. And you want to document each of the steps. When you get to that point where you truly need to make that step that makes you want to chew your fingernails off, you already have documentation, and you're going to make, again, additional documentation that they also sign. So no surprises to them. And I think it doesn't take away how that impacts you as a compassionate human being, but it can help you know that I have tried to do the right thing. I want to do the right thing. So when you're doing that kind of documentation, especially when you're writing things down that they're going to have to read or they need to read and then sign, make it very clear. Again, you're going to be doing like planning. This is the goal. You're going to be able to read this. We're going to know this by this time, and you're going to be this successful by this time. And if not, this is what the next step will be. So again, that you've got your clarification. Now, let's talk a little bit about, let's expand on your anxiety. Why do we in the laboratory have a hard time with termination? Honestly, why don't we terminate? And there's a lot of reasons for that. Number one is, often we go into the laboratory field. Why? Because we don't want direct patient contact. That's not our forte. We're not ready to go with the flow and make those quick decisions like that. And we have a fear of confrontation. Now, that there are, we know a few people, and we've worked with one who has no fear of confrontation. But that person's better than they used to be. But it's like that fear of confrontation. And if you want to be a really good supervisor and get the best out of your staff, you need to be able to handle that fear. Figure out how you're going to do that. And another reason why people don't do termination is because they have not done their due diligence with documentation, which I've mentioned that before. So it's, and I know with Melissa, I had said that document, document, document. It just, you write it down, you get it in black and white as close to the time that the event occurred. That's what you need to do. So another reason people avoid termination is they forget the big picture. What was that vision, mission that I had? And how am I going to stay the course? And if you don't keep looking back at that, then you're you're not going to want to make those hard decisions. You know, it is hard. It's hard for anybody, but they're very hard. And then that thing that I mentioned before, it's you have to realize that at that point, it's not personal. It's business. Yeah. So another thing, and Dave, if you ever end up going into a supervisor position like that, I would really, truly, truly encourage you, get to know your human resources persons. Develop a relationship with someone who can be your contact. When I was in as the technical director, just everything in the hospital was like in turmoil. And so one of the problems that we had was our HR department, and the HR department basically got replaced. There were a few people who stayed, but it was nearly a clean sweep. So when these people came back in, and when these people came in, man, I thought, I got to get to know them. So I developed relationships. So I was close to the VP over HR. I was close to the director of HR, and always had them as a person to bounce these concerns off of, and to make sure that if I ever was in the position where I had to terminate someone, that I had done my due diligence. I had done everything possible to help that person be successful. But for the sake of the institution and the patients and the physician's trust in us, we need to let this person go. So, so, you know, if you're in that position, or if you're ever in a position where you're ever possibly going to have to terminate someone, then go and get to know your HR people.
Yes. So I was actually going to mention that right before you brought it up. That's so helpful. When my husband was a manager, he would always go to his HR rep and say, I have questions. And they were helpful just to make sure guiding, he was doing the right things. He had the right processes in place so that he could discipline his staff as necessary.
Yeah. Yeah. And the other thing is, it doesn't surprise the HR people.
Right.
You know, they know, oh, we got a little problem brewing over here. What are we going to, you know, do we have this in our future? Is there ways that we can help them? Are there, you know, honestly, when I was in that position, there were multiple people who were problem people. They were had discipline issues that nobody ever dealt with. And essentially what they told me is that, okay, well, you need to deal with it. So, I mean, I knew I needed the help from the HR staff, and they guided me, and together, you know, we did what needed to be done. Yeah, it can break your heart if you have to terminate someone, but it's important.
It resonates with me that it goes back to the goals, the vision of the institution, the vision you have, and then what's best. I think you can always get Dave on board if you can relate it back to patient care. Because my training did such a great job of instilling that value in me that I can do a very difficult thing if I know it's in the interest of the care of the patient.
That's great. And
then I'm in a position today, right, where as an instructor, I have had students that are unsuccessful in my courses, and I will tell them, they might watch this, they probably won't, but it affects me personally. Every time a student is not successful in my course, I own a piece of that.
Yeah.
And I never do so with any joy. And it's like a somber thing for me. And it was funny hearing you talk and reflecting on it. Like, this is sort of analogous, right, to the discipline piece.
If a funny experience I had was when I was in college. I went to University of Pittsburgh, And honestly, I had no idea what a great program it was while I was there. That was like a program I just fell into. But looking back, I mean, it was stellar program. Anyway, my chemistry instructor, the clinical chemistry instructor. No, that one other thing is that while I was in college, I played varsity basketball. I also played volleyball. So I had a lot of fun when I was in college. Of course, I'm in this heavy science program. And these last 2 years, you know, I'm traveling with the team. We had practices. We ate our dinners together, all that sort of thing. So you can imagine, as instructors, I was not your A student. In fact, I never learned how to study until I went back to grad school. But my chemistry, clinical chemistry instructor, I still remember his name. And he came to me once. He actually asked me to stay after a lab. And he talked to me and he said, Vicky, this is not an easy conversation, but you're not doing well in chemistry. You just need to study a little bit. He said, you don't even need to study a whole lot, but you need to study enough that I can pass you. He said, because we need people who like you in the field. Now, I could have gotten offended. I could have been freaked out. I could have quit everything else that I was doing and studied nonstop. Well, that wasn't going to happen. But I mean, he did for me what you're trying to do for your students. And honestly, it was a great wake up call. And I simply started rereading my notes. And then my grades came up one or two levels after that. But he spoke out. He took action when it needed to be taken. He was very, very uncomfortable talking to me about that. But I think in many ways, I owe the success of my career to his taking that stand for me or with me. So keep doing what you're doing as an educator. So, couple, can I, what were you going to say?
No, I was saying, I was joking to myself, like, it's tough.
it really is. Some things to think about as far as discipline that are good things to do. Maybe I'll try to help us wrap this up a little bit, but Melissa's mentioned this as well. You praise in public. You know, you praise in public. That is so important. Where do you correct?
In private.
That's right. Again, there was this student that I had. He had been a student, then he became a staff person. And then I was like a technical person. I was the technical director. And he was sharp as a tack. He was so, so smart. The problem is he was a real cut up and he would do things that were inappropriate. Well, it was really, truly very easy to find things to communicate to him that he did well. So I could praise him in public. And then I had a little one-on-one with him. And I did document it because I didn't know when his actions were going to stop. But I had a one-on-one with him and just told him, you know, you really are a great tech. But these things that you're doing, I could cite specific instances. This makes people uncomfortable. Or this is out of place in a workplace. Doesn't even matter. You know, it could be a grocery store. Doing this here in a workplace, that's wrong. Anyway, so I was able to do that to correct in public. And now, I mean, he's the best. So that little, I was uncomfortable because he had been a student of mine. And then he became a coworker. And then I was his boss. So, you know, it was like, how's this going to go? I was really uncomfortable. But it worked the way they say it's supposed to work. So that was good. So another thing, and you guys know this already, is you nurture the star performers. Nurture them. That's that mentoring. And, you know, some people, maybe they don't want to go to that next level, but you still, you nurture them, help them get better at what they do. And then the last thing, we've already talked about that too, is find out what the staff needs to do their job and get it for them. And then sometimes just get out of the way. You know, that those are some really good discipline things. And then I think it was Melissa that you said is stay positive. Stay positive. I know that when I was the technical director, there were a couple times when, man, I was really struggling with some issues. I was technical director, but I was also the infection control officer for the whole hospital. Now, that really stunk. I was not a great microbiologist or virologist or anything like that, but I was responsible for the practitioners that were in the hospital. And it was miserable. So there were some days I would come into the laboratory, feel this misery in myself, and it would just kind of permeate through the laboratory. I could see that. The days when I would come in and do my traditional walk through the lab, greeting everybody that was there. Hey, how are you? How's it going? Oh, how's that new puppy or whatever? And then the staff was happy. You know, it goes back to that thing I heard my dad say, you know, if mama ain't happy, ain't nobody happy. So in a supervisor position, you need to reflect that. And Melissa, you already know that.
So, yeah, that was always difficult for me too. Somewhat of an emotional person. So when I was feeling negative, I think one of my greatest flaws is that I can project that. And that's challenging.
And you probably didn't take it out on anybody.
Yeah, maybe not necessarily. Yeah, some people probably got it, but yeah.
I doubt that. But it's that, you know, the way you are, people get that. You know, it's those nonverbal communications. You know, you come in with a smile on your face, or you come in, it's like, I got that furrowed brow going, you know. And it's like, oh, what's up with that? You know, what's happening today?
And it spreads, right?
Right. That's the reason. Yeah.
I think Kiebert said to me one time that if I wasn't laughing and joking and I was quiet and focused, everybody knew there was something wrong and don't talk, just do your work. But if I was fine and laughing, everybody knew that it was fine and they could all laugh and joke.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's like you're the mama's got to be happy. Yeah. And it's not that you have to deny or necessarily tamp down how you feel, but you've got to find a way to diffuse that or share it with somebody. And sometimes maybe just, you know, if you're in a supervisory position, maybe just share that with the staff. Hey, I'm having a struggle. And I don't want you guys to think that you're doing anything wrong, but I'm working on this thing. Honestly, it's that. Tell them how things are processing. And it's like having a kid. You know, you need to be open with them enough that they feel reassured. You don't have to tell them everything. They don't need that burden of weight, but they need to know that they're okay. So hey, were you gonna say something?
I was, no, go ahead. What were you going to say?
Okay, so we can close with maybe some do's and don'ts. Just kind of a review. I would say don't play ostrich. So in other words, you know, don't stick your head in the ground. Don't pretend like everything's okay. Don't ignore the issues. Another thing, this came from my experience as well. Don't raise your voice. You know, you can get excited and raise your voice like that, but you can't unless it is a really, truly a super bad issue, don't raise your voice. I seriously freaked out the supervisor one time in a meeting because one of the supervisors was saying something that it was inappropriate and it wasn't necessary. And I raised my voice and basically told them to just, you know, I can't remember exact words, but it wasn't appropriate. I raised my voice. I got loud. I was angry, frustrated with him. And to her credit, a different supervisor came to me and said, you know what? I think that that was inappropriate how you spoke to her. And I thought, you're right. And I never did that again. And I value that feedback, again, that feedback up to me. Appreciate that. But it's that, you know, along that same line, I mean, I know that one of the things that especially a lot of younger people do is they swear a lot. I mean, they're just there. Every other word is something bad. If you're a supervisor, I would suggest don't swear. Again, maybe part of that is my age, but seriously, the people who are above you will not look kindly on that. The people who are at your level may understand that. The people beneath you or beneath your pay grade, they will not respect you for that. And the other thing, don't have favorites.
Publicly.
What's that?
Publicly.
Yeah, that is correct. Yeah, can't have favorites in the public eye. You're always going to know who the star performers are. You're going to have, hopefully, you're going to have friends, even people who that you like. You like everything about them, and they're good workers. And man, I could just delegate stuff to that person. But if they become known as your favorite because of how you speak about them to other people, then you're cutting off your nose to spite your face. You know, that's just not good. Just like if you have multiple kids, you can't have a favorite kid. You know, you may because they're easier to deal with, but you can't have one that you, if you're going to be a successful parent, you can't have one like that. And then, so those are some don'ts to end with, some do's. One is really maintain your integrity. Sometimes I think that's easier said than done because there are a lot of very hard choices to make. But as much as you can, but go back, what's the vision here? What should our mission be? And am I sticking with that? So maintain your integrity. And another thing is make appropriate apologies. You're a human being. You're going to mess up. When you mess up and you recognize it or somebody brings it to your attention. And the supervisor I mentioned that I hollered at in a supervisor's meeting, I apologized. And I did it twice. I did it in person, privately, but I also apologized to her in front of the other supervisors at the next meeting.
It's huge. You talk about integrity. That is huge. Yeah.
I think that's really, you know, you can't expect to not make mistakes. We're human. But, you know, the other thing is make sure that your apology is appropriate. You don't want to go overboard. You don't want to be that syrupy, sticky kind of apology. And you don't want to say, I'm sorry, every single time. Yeah. Again, that's something a lot of young people do. Oh, I'm so sorry. Oh, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. Yeah. Leave that out of your vocabulary. So another thing, keep learning. Yeah, you guys know that. As educators, you have to keep learning. There are so many supervisors who could get better at what they do if they were to keep learning instead of, okay, I got this at this area. Let's maintain the status quo and we'll be happy till I retire. No, you have to keep learning. People see that as well. And then the other thing, and this is like a little nitty gritty, and I share this with you guys because I know you are so technology oriented. I encourage people to build a reference library. Certainly, make sure you know where all the www.gov guidelines are for different things. Know how to get to CDC and how to find, I don't know, education resources online, where to find podcasts, stuff like that. But there truly still is something to be found in textbooks. There is a depth of knowledge and then references to that knowledge that you could go to. So I encourage people, if they come into a supervisor's position, to start looking at what are some of the helps that can give me more of a knowledge base to move forward. So, and then I would say, put a plan together, figure out how you're going to do it, evaluate it, and start all over again.
That's great. Yeah, iterative excellence.
Yeah.
Hopefully that's helpful.
Yeah, no, I think that was really good information for everybody to think about. And
it's great talk.
I think it's really relevant too. I mean, even on some of like the med lab groups that you see on like social media and stuff, people will talk about, oh, well, they were a fantastic tech. Why are they a terrible supervisor? And it's like, this is why.
Yeah. Yeah. It's not actually the logical evolution of our, but we need people that are, you know, skilled in the technical area to supervise too, right? Because if they don't have that piece, well, you know, can we imagine how horrible it would be to have direct management supervision that has no idea what a tech does? So, but it is a common problem. I mean, I saw it in so many different places and in unexpected areas. But I personally love the title, Super Tech Doesn't Equal Supervisor. It's just right on the nose.
Yeah.
Thank you very much for your time, Vicky.
Yes, thank you.
It was very enlightening and always lovely to talk with you again. And
it was a lot of fun. I honestly, the joy of my life was, apart from having kids and grandkids, it was being in the laboratory. I loved that. Loved hematology. I loved working with you guys. They were just knowing that we were integral parts of patient care. That was just, I love that. And I miss that. I miss that. Every once in a while, I think, well, maybe I could do a class or two at one of the local universities. I mean, there's some big universities here where I'm living, and there are several technical colleges. Then I think, no, I don't think so. But it's fun to put some of my knowledge down. So.
Well, we appreciate it. Yeah, I know, right?
But, I'm very grateful for the time I had with you. Yeah. But now it's time for you to do you, so to speak.
I can coach and be a grandma and go to church. I
work. You're still growing people, right?
Mm-hmm. It's just... I really am. Really am. Yeah, and honestly, that people like you guys and like myself, I mean, that's just part of who we are. Trying to value people and help that person become a better person. Just that's a good thing. That's a good thing. Well, thanks. Thank you very much. Yeah. I had a blast.
Thank you. And everybody else, thanks for listening.
Yeah, thanks for your time. Mm.